Welcome, ladies, gentlemen, fellow slaves of the global plantation. The Vinnie Eastwood Show is bad news. It's like the news, but worse. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't enjoy it. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're the only thing worse than living in a high-tech global police state run by child-trafficking Satanists is Vinny's jokes. I mean, my God. Anyway, welcome to the show today, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm in a bit of a state. Actually, on the beach right now, broadcasting via Skype off of an iPhone with a pair of headphones, mate. So, yeah, guys, it's very glad times to be on a beach instead of in the studio for once. It's very, very good stuff. Now, during the weekend that passed, I was looking through some emails and some comments and things of that nature, and I came across a couple of gems that really kind of illustrate what's wrong with the truth movement. And the people in it. Just, I know you know that not everybody in this movement is 100% sane, that not everybody is 100% cool, that not everybody's easy to get along with. Some people are atrocious and hostile and stupid and accusatory and lazy. Ignorant, wrong, and in some cases, just straight up crazy. And that's what's got me, kept me up last night and got me up early in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. I was so pissed off that I couldn't sleep even after I'd gotten to sleep, you know, because of the importance of this issue that a lot of people don't really seem to think is really a big issue, is that the truth movement itself is just so fractured and few people have much of a handle on what that means. Have a look at our enemies, okay? Have a look at the political parties, politicians and so on and so forth, and how freaking dangerous they are and how well organized they are, how many people they got working under them, how many organizations that they have going out and recruiting new people to become part of their cults and to destroy their lives and destroy the lives of others by indoctrinating them into the system. How organized are they? How much infighting do they have? They're extremely organized and they have very little infighting. The truth movement seems almost the polar opposite by comparison. We're trying to do good by being disorganized and infighting. All right? You know, you see what I'm saying? It's not the brightest move. And people got to frickin' pull their heads in, man. And I understand if you haven't been doing this for a long time, and if you don't live in a tiny frickin' country like New Zealand where everybody knows everybody, it's kind of like living in a small town pretending to be a country. So that when you say something or you're working with somebody, I remember reading this political article one time about how the politicians are in New Zealand. Sure, they stab each other in the back and what have you, but when they do see each other and everything, it's all smiles, mate, okay? Because they know that they're stuck in this small place and they have to work together. And the same is true of the truth movement globally. It's a very, very small thing, all right? A very tiny minority of very determined people. It's usually the only thing that changes the course of history. But if we tolerate and are willing to sit idly by, while a good portion of people who are allegedly on our side are simply stabbing us in the back, accusing us of things, making up wild, crazy theories and things like that, accusing you of being a fraud, accusing you of being an agent, and so on and so forth. No evidence whatsoever. You made a video one time about something that they saw, and they haven't seen your other several thousand other videos about other topics, and or they claim that you don't cover this topic, you know, and when you have made like 100 videos on that topic, all right? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. They don't know who they're talking to when they criticize somebody like me. And there's so many other hosts on this network. I was just perusing the archives there of people I know that have been in this game for as long or longer than I have been. And I see the way that they work it. And I know that they know the truth about working in this industry. You have to be nice to people. Okay? You have to be able to collaborate. You have to be able to work together. And if you're not doing that, you basically force yourself into a wee corner where you start to get angry with people. You start to doubt yourself. You start to go nuts. You start talking to yourself and not listening to anybody else. And you wind up causing more destruction than good, regardless of how smart you are, regardless of how good and well-crafted your incredibly long emails are. You know, these people are just wasters of time. The vast majority of people that I've met in this movement who send out mass emails and things of that nature and subscribe to you to their email list without asking you are basically time wasters. And they're annoying the hell out of me. And I'm sure they're probably annoying the hell out of a lot of other people too, who've actually, you know, got their stuff together and are actually doing something, at least on a weekly basis, to try and broadcast the truth to people. But there's a lot of people who don't do that, haven't got themselves together. And so what they do is they try to accuse everybody who is actually doing something of not doing enough. All right, now, my suggestion is that if you stop doing that and instead start doing something yourself, you will actually start achieving something. You will actually start accomplishing something. Whereas by telling people who are already doing something, which you are not, you're still not working on anything, and you're achieving absolutely nothing. So just stop it, okay? Just stop it. It's stupid. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of yours. It's a waste of the freaking truth movement's energy. Right? We're up against the worst criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that the world has ever frickin' encountered in thousands of years, who are more well-organized than the frickin' legions of Satan himself. And you're trying to accuse me of being a fraud. Okay? Look at who your enemy is. It's not me. Not yet, anyway. Because when people get really, really pissy with me and they don't stop, then this is the thing. I'll just go no contact. Because you can realize that this person has narcissistic personality disorder and you go, nah, not worth my hassle. All right? Not worth my time. Mm-mm, it's out. But if somebody really, really has it in for me, like Pete Santilli did back in the day, we did a video called The Unauthorized Biography of Pete Santilli. And although my YouTube channel with all the 6,300 videos and 20,000 hours of content got deleted, somebody did steal my video and upload it to YouTube, which I'm retrospectively very grateful for, because people can now go and watch The Unauthorized Biography of Pete Santilli, because this is what I do to people. If you are a bad person and you will not stop messing with me, eventually it'll piss me off enough to do something about you, okay? And you don't want that to happen, because then when you watch the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli, we tear apart your entire life, everybody you've ever screwed over, every bad behavior you've ever frickin' done, and then put it together in chronological order so that people can know from start to finish that you're a frickin' bad person, so that it's undeniable, and we'll make fun of you while we're exposing you, so that it gives that extra rub. Don't do it to me, man. Don't make me do this to you. And I'm not threatening anybody. It's just like, you have to put a lot of effort into pissing me off. you have to put a lot of effort into it. Because ultimately, who are you? You're one person. Have you got some enormous government organization behind you? Like the police or, you know, the tax office or something of that nature? No. So you don't really have any power. These organizations, they have real power, like people with guns and things of that nature, to enforce their will. Enforce, to give force. That's what they do. They use force against people. These are the people that we're really up against. Now, in the alternative media, I know that there are a lot of people who listen to these kinds of broadcasts who have their own guns, who will not be slaves. And thank you. Thank you for just being you. Because without you, there wouldn't be a genuine truth movement. It'd just be all of these people that I'm talking about here on this broadcast today. And there wouldn't be all of those decent folks who every single day are trying to do the right thing and every single day get called names, get ostracized from their family, have a hard time at work, feel lonely, isolated. And despite all that, you don't turn into dicks who run around accusing people of crap. You don't harass members of the truth movement because you say that they're not doing enough or whatever. You listen, you donate, you share, you do what you can, and you live your lives in the best way that you can. And that's all that we can really do. We're not all designed to be talk radio show hosts or filmmakers or whatever, you know. What kind of shoes are the filmmakers wearing? Shoes that ordinary people made, okay? What kind of stuff are they shooting on the camera? Stuff that people with technical skill made, you know? It's all one organism and we're all doing our own little part. The brain, the gut, and the heart, they all have neurons in them, which means they all do thinking, you know? You ever been asked to think with your head, think with your heart, or trust your gut, you know? It's because all those things are in alignment. They can each do independent thinking. And the same is true of the truth movement and the people in it and all of the different skills that we have to offer. We don't have to do all the work. We can all do our own thinking and do our own thing. That is what we are designed to be here to do. Whatever it is, it's regardless of your level of commitment, regardless of your level of passion or whatever it is, don't be hard on yourself. Look, they have made, when I say they, you know, the ubiquitous they, the scumbaggery elements of the New World Order, have spent a lot of money and a lot of time figuring out how all of our brains work, the things that make us tick, and they have been trying to make us depressed. They've been trying to make us feel isolated. They've been trying to make us feel lonely. They've been trying to make us feel crazy. They've been trying to make us feel like we're the stupid ones. They've been trying to make us feel like we should be full of regret for speaking the truth and for doing the right thing. And those are all games that they're playing on us that it's almost impossible to not fall into because of how expertly they play them, you know? And now you've got people who just watched a documentary yesterday about COINTELPRO. Don't even know what it actually means. Don't actually know the definition of it or where it came from or where it started. But now, any talk radio show host who says something that they don't like, personally, after their whole day of research, is COINTELPRO. Just give me a break. I wish I was like living in a world that had adults in it, you know, like mostly adults or just children that were kids, you know. You know how kids are fun and kids are always laughing and running around, and they're full of energy and they're sweet and they've got big smiles and doing all this creative, crazy stuff and whatever, and then we beat it out of them in school and what have you. I would love it if there were kids like that around and adults like that too. Not adult children who fucking don't... Oh, I'm so sorry about the swearing, guys. I'm just getting a little bit rowdy here. Who don't actually understand the concept of taking personal responsibility for one's actions, one's words. And I realize how ironic that is, considering the slip and free speech there. But but the point is here that it's a process, and nobody else can actually do this process for you. So, for example, if you've all the people that I'm talking about, if they were to hear this broadcast, they would think I was talking about somebody else, or they would take it personally as some kind of attack and then start attacking me for saying it, shooting the messenger. What they should be doing is what I try to do all the time and sometimes fail, admittedly, is to take personal responsibility for what I'm doing and listen to what people are actually telling me that displeases them about my actions. Weigh it up between the evidence of what they're saying and my personal experience and opinion. And if the evidence disagrees with my personal opinion, I have to change my personal opinion. If the evidence tells me that I'm doing the wrong thing, I have to stop doing that, okay? Stop doing the wrong thing, you know? Stop sowing dissent. Stop getting pissed off with each other just because you're in the same competitive field, right? Competition doesn't work as well as cooperation does. I did a study one time when there were these two trucking companies that had to go to a certain location, and there were two roads to it. One road had two gates on either end, and one of the trucking companies controlled either gate, so you couldn't go in or out with both of them without both of them agreeing to it. And the other road was very, very long, so it took a long time to get around. So they decided to test whether or not they could compete. And so they wouldn't let the other truck through, and the other truck wouldn't let them through the very straight, easy road, because they controlled a gate each. And so they both had to go the long way around every time to deliver their goods. Then they tried the cooperative model, where they both let each other through. And not only did neither of them lose money, they both made more money because of the ease of delivering their goods by having somebody to help them and work with them, so that they could both benefit, right? This is the model that's, I believe, is really important for people to get their head around, particularly in the truth movement, because I've made so much things with people and so little by myself. And you realize the value of other people's skill, expertise, and capability. And you realize that all the most important things you have ever made in your life were not made wholly by yourself. You had help. You had inspiration. You had collaborators. And that is the whole idea, ladies and gentlemen. And I believe I hear the music. And we'll be coming right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Was a prime suspect in a bootleg investigation. Everybody wants.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Eastwood Show, the show that's all about being Mexican. And we're at the beach house at the moment, ladies and gentlemen, trying to have some much-needed R&R, but instead I was like, you know what, I really do need to do a show. So, guys, I'm here for you, and if you want to call in, the caller number is on republicbroadcasting.org. And first caller tonight here is Andy in Texas, I think, a regular caller. Andy, are you there?
Oh, can you hear me, my friend?
I can indeed.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for taking my call. In the world that we live in, we've got an entire group of things that we have to be aware of right now, and you and I can see those things. The one thing that really bothers me the most is the fact that the people can't grasp that they're being enslaved. You know, when you're the best slave is the one who doesn't realize she's a slave. And that's really where we're at in this entire world, because with the rules and laws and everything that's going on right now, we're all slaves to this world. And I don't believe that's the way we were meant to be. What do you say?
Well, I mean, theoretically, it was the way we were meant to be if the story of the Nephilim and all of that stuff is to be believed. But I'm reminded of the series for the Dark Crystal, and there's a line in it where the Chamberlain is talking to the Gelflings, who are being sucked of their essence by the Skeksis, and their spiritual essence is just sucked out of them by a big machine that get drunk by these evil, parasitical, reptilian, vulture-like creatures. And the Chamberlain creature says to the Gelfling, "How can Gelflings be slaves if Gelflings don't know they're slaves?" And the whole idea here is that slaves who don't know that they're slaves are the best kind, because slaves who know that they're slaves are unwilling and they have to be forced to do everything. And it costs a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort and causes a lot of injuries to force somebody to do something that you don't want them to do. But if you can psychologically program them through successive years of education system to be willing to obey authority without question, then you can get those slaves to grow up knowing nothing different and thinking that this is the way things are and be happy with it. There was once an experiment where they had three monkeys in a room with some bananas at the top of a pole. And every time the monkeys went for the bananas, they'd spray them all down with a hose. And they stopped going for the bananas. Then they took one of those monkeys out and brought in another monkey who'd never been sprayed by a hose. And he looked at the bananas and he started going for them. And the other two monkeys grabbed him and beat the hell out of him. And we went, "Oh, that's interesting." And then they took another one of the monkeys out who'd been sprayed by a hose and brought in another monkey who hadn't. And again, the two monkeys, including the one who'd never been sprayed by the hose, who didn't know why he didn't go to the bananas, grabbed that other monkey and beat him down. And then they took away the third monkey who'd been sprayed by a hose and had another guy. And guess what happened when that other guy got replaced? That's right. The two who were in there, who were never sprayed by a hose, who never actually knew why you didn't go from the bananas, beat him down. And the same is true in human culture as well. There's a woman who cut both sides of her. Yeah, she cut both sides of her pot roast off, and somebody asked her once, you know, "Why do you do that?" She says, "Well, my mother did it." I go, "Okay, we'll go ask her then." She goes, "Why do you cut both sides of the pot roast off?" She goes, "Well, because my mother did it." And you go, "Okay then." So this little girl goes and asks her great-grandmother, "Why do you cut the ends of the pot roast off?" And she goes, "Well, during the Depression, we didn't have a very big pot, so we had to cut the sides off so that it would fit." So you get the concept here, that all of us are living under this system that is pre-programmed, that existed before we got here, that we never actually got the time or the inclination to question. And we're just running a stupid program for no reason.
Hey, Vinny, so are we all brainwashed? Have we been
brainwashed?
I agree.
You know? I mean, one can only hope.
To a certain extent, everybody's brainwashed. Yeah,
you have to kind of assume that. Naturally, because the system itself is so overarching and so global that even those of us who are, you know, allegedly awakened people like you and myself, I guarantee both of us are still brainwashed in some way with something that we haven't learned yet and are still running some kind of program. And we spend the majority of our lives trying to find out what those programs are and retune them and that kind of thing. So we're more in tune with reality. But, you know, it's a tough job. I feel frustrated. We'll be right back after the break, Andy. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Call in at republicbroadcasting.org.
Yeah, but I'm not complaining. Oh, I feel frustrated. Yeah, freedom won't make it. No.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about getting your Luftwaffe aloft. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And I wanted to talk a little bit about humour. And somebody asked me the other day, I think it was Conrad Rogos. You're on the show soon. He did a lovely video about me and my arrest and that kind of thing. He was a very, very lovely guy. And apparently he was listening to me when he was 13. And now he's a truther and stuff. So this is good to see. Well, anyway, he asked me this question about what I think about humor and why I think it's important, you know. And there's a lot of terrible situations that human beings may go through, you know, war, suffering, breakups, you know, things of that nature that you can't really do anything about. You know, you can't just stop them from happening. So you have to find a way of dealing with them. Now, you know, you can cry, you can get depressed and so on and so forth. You can get angry, you can try and reason and bargain a way out of it. But the most effective method in many cases, you know, is humour. And legend holds that back in the day, when the Battle of Gettysburg had drawn to a close and it was the bloodiest battle in the entire Civil War, Abraham Lincoln was there, and the reporter, I think for the New York Times at the time, was walking through Gettysburg and heard this laughter coming out from one of the barracks where a lot of the injured soldiers were. And they walk in, and there was the president sitting around with these soldiers telling jokes and making them all laugh. And this reporter was kind of shocked by this. Mr. President, how can you be so jovial in such terrible times? And the president replied, because if I didn't laugh, I'd cry. And so we have that element within us that wants to laugh rather than cry. Now, biochemically, it sort of releases endorphins. These are sort of feel-good hormones into the bloodstream. And that makes you feel better. It helps to make you feel lighter. You exercise your lungs and your heart, and it actually helps your health quite significantly, to the point where a Chinese couple, I believe they were in Beijing. I can't be specific on that. I don't know China terribly well. Anyway, his wife, this Chinese guy, had a cancer diagnosis. And that she had like a month or two to live. And so he took off work for a couple of months and he sat with his wife every day watching comedy movies. Comedy. And the cancer disappeared. And they did another study with people who had colds and flu-like symptoms, and they would show them action movies or dramas. And another test group, they would show comedy films. And before and after they went in to watch these movies, they would measure their blood and how many antibodies their body was producing in order to rid itself of the infection. And surprise, surprise, the ones who were watching the comedy had a huge uptake, as much as 40% more being produced than those that weren't. And swearing too. You'll find a lot of comedians do use a bit of swearing in their comedy. I'm prone to it as well, because not during FCC regulated radio, if I can help it. And there was a study done where they had students put their hands in ice water. And in this ice water, their hands stayed as long as they could hold them. Now, one group of students was allowed to swear, and one group of students was not. They can make any other noises they want, you know, they can yell and cry and scream or whatever. But the ones who were allowed to swear were able to hold their hands in the ice water for a full 30 seconds longer on average than those who weren't able to. Because your swearing is kind of like your natural painkiller. What happens when you hit your thumb with the hammer instead of the nail? you release your natural painkiller by swearing, generally speaking. And humor's kind of important to this as well. Like when people are going through war, there's this kind of humor called trench humor. It's very dark comedy. And people laughing, meanwhile, friends are being blown up and things are turning to ash and dust around them in real time, and they're still able to have a laugh about it. This is a survival technique, okay? And I am cognizant of the fact that there are comedians and things of that nature who do truth, and there are people who do talk radio and what have you, but they don't seem to blend, kind of thing. Like my show is mostly about just having a real good time and having a good laugh, and it's also about exposing scumbaggery, right? But most people are about exposing scumbaggery and maybe occasionally having a bit of a laugh. And I think that the laughter is actually kind of more important than the information. And I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. You're like, oh, my God, Vinny, the information is so important. It's like, yes, it is. But if you're in a stressed out state, in a fight or flight response, that information is not going to go through because it disables your primate cortex, the front of your brain that does all your thinking, your black and white logic. That's where the information needs to be absorbed into. But if you're in a state of fear or shock or panic about the information that you're hearing, and I know that all of us have been in that state because the information that we're going across is the most frightening and shocking information that anybody in human history has discussed, for the large part. So you can be forgiven for losing your sense of humor, for taking these things very seriously. But I advise you, just as a rite of survival, is to keep that sense of humor and to keep laughing through it and keep making jokes about these horrible things because of how it affects your brain and your ability to think. Once you release those endorphins and those happy chemicals into your brain, you take the bad feeling away. And when the bad feeling away, because most of the things you'll learn about aren't affecting you right at the second, like they're not going to kill you in the next 60 seconds. And so your brain has the ability to cope and actually receive the information. That's what I believe, is that with humor, people will receive the information a lot better than with just straight up serious facts and evidence, principally because feelings is how people change their minds, not facts. Okay. Anybody who tells you facts are really important for changing people's minds doesn't know the whole story on that one, and that you do need to understand the proclivity for people to have emotions based upon information, and also how you can dress people's emotions up with humor and other techniques so that they don't encounter those bad emotions so much, to prevent their brains from actually absorbing the information. That's why people don't tend to listen to this show for terribly long, because after they listen to it for a little while, they realize that every freaking show, it's the same show. Who are you? What do you do? Be yourself, have fun. And as soon as you've understood those principles, the ones that this show is run on, and apply them in your own life, you don't necessarily need to listen to this show anymore. You know, you've got it down. And that's what I encourage people to do, is not spend all their time consuming other people's content. If those people are trying to teach you something, absorb that content, learn it, and then start applying it, okay? Because knowledge that is learned but never used is the definition of useless knowledge. There's a lot of people in the truth movement with a boatload of useless knowledge. And just getting things done. Like, do you know somebody who can build things? Do you know an electrician or a gardener or something like that? Because the real world is where all the real work basically gets done. And we're in a very different branch of the citizen journalist here, whereby I don't believe, per se, that doing radio and interviewing people and so on and so forth is real work. You know, we create something and we perform a service and it's generally valued and seen by many people, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't believe it's the real work, right? The real work is generally done by the guests that you have on shows, the people who've read those government documents, who went to the committee hearings, who gave submissions, who got themselves filmed on C-SPAN, who blew the whistle on their tobacco company, or you know, people are out there in the real world doing real things at the coal face. Those are the most important people in the world, in my opinion. And the people like myself are secondary, okay? Just like all us listeners, you know, like I listen to radio and stuff sometimes as well. And what was interesting about being a listener is the fact that you don't get to talk back to the host, or you don't get to correct them or something like that. Sure, you can leave comments and what have you, but the majority of people who would be on that wouldn't do it. So you feel like you're contributing less, right? But that's not necessarily true. I mean, think about World War II, for example, or any war for that matter. How did those soldiers on the front line actually get there? They had people driving the trucks. They had people driving the boats. They had people flying the planes. They had people cooking the meals, people setting up the showers, people doing hundreds of different jobs just to make sure one guy could get there on the front lines to do some real work, right? And that doesn't mean to say that being a soldier and everything is like all the rage and what have you. We need warriors, but we don't need mercenaries. People are just getting paid to fight and wouldn't fight if they weren't getting paid. But this whole notion of contributionism. So that in every war, there are many parts to play, and a lot of people want to be on the front line, and when they get there, they realize they actually really don't like it. And a lot of people who know already that they don't want to be on the front line because it's not for them, but they do want to support those people on the front line. And I do want to thank all those people who donate to me, or those people who set up those $5 a week and $5 a month automatic payments into the PayPal, it does help significantly just to pay the bills on a week-to-week basis and make things happen around here so that I don't go hungry. Now, we've got Chance in West Virginia on line one. Chance, are you there?
Yes. Bravo, Vinny. You explained it 100% right. I just tuned in, and I heard your explanation about humor.
Oh, thanks, bro.
And I just wanted to congratulate you. I've come to that conclusion a long time ago myself. And, I, you know, that's why I can't deal with a lot of people who take all this too seriously. Now, I know you need to know it, but I refuse to live in fear or to let other people put me in fear. And the way you described it, I have to congratulate you, Vinny. This is why I stopped listening to a lot of talk radio. There's a lot of knowledge, but for the most part, it's useless. You know?
Yeah.
It's useless. They're not telling me nothing. And even if I don't know what they know, it's still useless. The time for spouting useless information is long gone. We either need solutions or humor. And that's the bottom line, I'd say, Vinny. Would you agree?
You know, you've actually touched on something really important there, because humor is a solution as well. For example, you've got to solve the problem that's causing all the trauma, right? The scumbaggery. But you've also got to solve the problem, which is the fact that you've got to deal with the trauma right here, right now, in order to be able to even have a clear enough head to even look at the problem in an objective sense to be able to remedy it's the solution, right?
Well,
so what if humor
is
actually the stepping stone? Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, Vinny, I wish more people would look at it the way you do. You are a breath of fresh air. Most people are too panicked and too out of their minds with fear that they don't understand a word you said, probably. And, you know, so be it. You know, really, I mean, they just want to run around like a chicken with their head cut off, or just spout and talk and talk and talk. And, you know, I sit back and I got to laugh at it after a while. I mean, not that what's happening is funny, but it's how people handle it that drives me completely bonkers.
Yeah, well, it's stressful, right? You know, like, yes. There's two approaches. Like, one guy, he sees a really horrible situation. He makes a joke about it, and the group of all of them that saw this horrible thing all just laugh and then accept the situation for what it is. Now, the second guy...
Vinny, here's another thing. Don't we all have enough pressure and fears in our daily lives with sickness, with trying to pay bills or what have you? I mean, we have this pressure 24/7. So to go bonkers over something without injecting some humor, I think is a fatal mistake. And with that, Vinny, God bless you. You hit the nail on the head, brother.
Thanks for that, Chance. Yeah, man, it's getting to be this sort of psych warfare type thing. And if people are constantly being injected with poison and or creating it themselves, they are making the situation worse for not only themselves, but obviously everybody else as well. And I recall I was talking to Catherine Smith. She's the editor of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine here, along with the Uncensored magazine with her husband, Jonathan Eisen. And I was real down in the dumps one day, and people were giving me crap about doing the truth and stuff. These are early days. And she says to me, Vinny, you know, two things. Don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what people say about you personally. And those words have kind of lived with me for a long time. And I don't always adhere to them, you know. I'm not perfect, but I try, you know. I try. And the whole idea behind taking things too seriously, taking yourself too seriously, I'm just trying to think about it now. Why is it such a bad thing to take something so seriously and or take yourself too seriously? Maybe it's because you don't know yourself completely. right? We're looking outwards, aren't we? We're looking subjectively outwards at the world. And if we're able to laugh at ourselves, it means that we realize that we're not perfect and that we can laugh at ourselves. We can be the butt of jokes ourselves. And that actually makes us feel a lot more comfortable, doesn't it? That's why you don't take yourself so seriously. And the same principle, I think, maybe goes for taking a subject so seriously. If you take a subject so seriously, it's because you know everything about it, right? And that nobody could ever possibly teach you something about it. And there's people like this out there. They don't. And nobody ever will know everything there is to know about any one subject, no matter how qualified or how much they are. There's always tiny little bits and pieces and things of that nature. You know, I thought I knew what happened on 9/11 and what the international globalist network looked like until people who'd done some work, you know, showed me. And I was like, oh, wow, that actually changes things a little bit. And which is great, because then you're constantly learning and growing. If you are taking yourself and your work too seriously, nobody said you can't take it seriously. Too seriously is the point here. That's the preface. You are robbing yourself of the knowledge of your humanity, your vulnerability, your ability to be wrong, okay? And if you are unable to be wrong, you are unable to be taught. If you cannot be taught, you cannot learn. What is the point in being in a world with a brain that technically works if you cannot learn, because you take yourself, your opinions, and the work that you're doing, no matter how good you are at it, too seriously? You cannot enjoy life. And people generally can't even enjoy your company either. You'll be able to collaborate with people, sure, but they will leave you because you take yourself too seriously and they can't have a good time around you. That's the thing. You ever worked with somebody who you can't have a good time around? You can't be yourself around? You can't just relax? You can't just chill? You can't just laugh? Because they're always stressing and running around and buggering things up with their nonsense, you know? It's not a good work environment. And some of us have that environment at home, right? You're at home and you can't even get away from the stress of other people taking themselves too seriously and taking the things that they do too seriously. And then they get even more serious when you make jokes about it and you try to make light of the situation. You know, it's a exercise in, in futility when you look at the world as though it's a problem you can solve. It's too big. There's an old story that there was once a man who tried to change the world, and he failed. The world was too big. So he tried to change his country, and he failed at that as well. His country was too big. So he tried to change his city. Couldn't do it either. Same reason. So in the last desperate attempt, he tried to change his family, and they ignored him. If only he'd changed himself, his family would have seen his good example and changed. And then they would have helped him to show the city a better example. And then the country and the world. It all starts from within. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining in. And we will see you next time on The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Go and donate at vinnieeastwood.com. And support the band. All the music that you hear on this is by Vinnie and the Vendettas. We had a jam with them this weekend. Love you, everybody. We'll see you next time.